Krishna. I am extremely happy to see all of you again for this Prerana festival for this month of October. How many of you are coming from the previous Prerana we have attended? Okay, we have... In my school days, we had a mathematics teacher, Mrs. Margaret, and she had asked a question, very interesting question, which I would like to ask all of you. Of the two personalities, who is superior, one's mother or one's teacher? Why? Why mother is superior? Any reasons? Why do you think mother is superior to teacher?
Mother teaches the basic things that we want.
Mother teaches the basic things what we want. So, how many are of the opinion that mother is superior to teacher? Raise your hands. And how many of you are of the opinion that teacher is superior to our mothers? Only one. Okay, we have two. Well, just like all of you are very sincerely raising your hands and trying to give explanations as to who is superior for what reasons, similarly, we also at that time, we were very sincerely, religiously trying to answer this question of hers. Do you want to know what was her answer? You want to know? Really? But your yes is not very, well, yes, okay. she said, surprisingly, the teacher is superior to the mother. So you win. She said the teacher is superior to the mother. And the reason she said, because a mother can put to sleep how many of her children at a time? Maybe one, two, three, four, as many children she has. But a teacher, a boring teacher, can put to sleep a huge crowd of students as big as this at a time. So in that sense, she said that the teacher is more superior than the mother. So today, I don't want to become that teacher who is superior than your mothers. So hopefully we'll have a nice interesting session today in which we'll try to understand this particular topic of why do bad things happen to good people or vice versa. Why? This is a more important question nowadays. Why good things are happening to so many bad people? This is a more alarming question which people are asking nowadays. One time there was a man who was not getting married. It's also one of the problems nowadays. So he was not getting married and somehow he was very depressed, rejected. So one of his friends, you know, was trying to help him out getting some girls that, you know, which would be favorable for him, he could get married like that. So, the friend inquired that, what's happening, you know? That so many girls you are seeing, but, you know, not able to get married to even one of them. So he said that, you know, this particular girl I brought and my mother saw, she rejected her. That particular girl, again my mother saw, she rejected. So all these girls, you know, which I am hoping to get married, my mother rejects. So then the friend suggested, why don't you get a girl which is like your mother? And he said, I brought one, but my father rejected. So we may have our conceptions of what is good, what is bad. One particular thing for someone might be very good, and the same particular thing for someone else might be very bad. Just like, Diwali time. For some people, Diwali time might be like, happening time. So many things are happening, new dresses, firecrackers and sweets and, so many things happen. But for some people, it might be Diwala instead of Diwali. The animals or the birds might be in misery. Why? What these humans, they go crazy on this particular day. So much of noise pollution and, they can't sleep at night or they can't do their thing. So it's all maybe a relative term, but we'll try to focus on a standard on which we can, a benchmark on which we can understand this particular topic. Now, this particular topic was actually a book entitled When Bad Things Happen to Good People. This is a book. This is the title of a book. And the author of this book is Harold Kushner. Now, this particular person, Harold Kushner, he was a rabbi, a priest from the Christian religion. He was a staunch believer in Christianity. But it so happened that his 7-year-old son, he contracted a very peculiar disease called progeria. Anyone knows what about this disease, what progeria means? No one knows? No one from the medical school? Really? This is a very peculiar disease, progeria, in which the patient starts to age prematurely. If a patient is like aged 14 years, then starts prematurely aging, the patient might prematurely age up till 60, though he's only lived 14 years. So all the symptoms, the bodily symptoms of a 60-year-old person gets into the system of a patient who has contracted this particular disease, progeria. So the son of this Harold Kushner, this Christian priest, contracted this disease, progeria, and he was only 7 years old when he started looking like a 60-year-old man. And he died when he was 14 years old. So now, Mr. Harold Kushner, he started to have some doubts on God. Because he was a priest. He was God's man. So he started having some doubts on God that, why did God do this to me, of all people, when I was a staunch believer in Him, did so much for Him, why did God do this to me? So he wrote this book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People, in which, kind of analyzing the different qualities of God, like we hear, God is omniscient. Omniscient means He's all-knowing. He knows everything. He knows exactly what's happening right now in our minds. So we may be able to hide what is happening in our mind, but God is a person who knows everything. It is said that His omniscience, about His omniscience, it is said that in a village full of blind people, on a dark night, on a dark rock, a black ant, nobody can see, but God can see. Because He knows that there is that ant on that particular, dark rock, in a dark night, village full of blind people, but He can see. So that is how He is omniscient. So He is kind of analyzed in this book, the conclusion of this book, that if God is all omniscient, just keep going. If God is all omniscient, then he may not be all powerful. Because if he knew that my son is going to die of that disease, why didn't he save him? So which means he may not have the power to save. He may have the knowledge to save, but he may not have the power to save. And then, you know, in his book he concludes that if God is called as all merciful, we call God as all merciful. So he might be all merciful, but he might not have the other power of being omniscient or omnipresent. He might have the mercy aspect, the merciful heart, but he might not have the access to reach to the place where my son was about to die. So like that, he concludes in his book that we should give some respite to God. That after all, you know, he's handling the entire creation. So he may be busy with so many affairs, or he must have misplaced my son's files here and there. Happens in government offices also. So he might have misplaced my son's files. So therefore, we should give him some relief. So he might not be all perfect. So he concluded that God is not all perfect. He has some limitations. Therefore, we see that bad things happen to good people. That was his conclusion. Now, on the other hand, there was this one person, all of you must be knowing him, Mr. Charles Darwin. Now, Charles Darwin, his son, 14-year-old son, died of cholera. So, Charles Darwin, who also, before he propagated the Darwinian theory, Charles Darwin was a staunch Christian. So when his son, 14-year-old son, died, now, of course, Harold Kushner, he made a compromise. He struck a compromise that God is there, but he has the limitations. But Charles Darwin, he went to the other extreme. There is no God at all. If my son, 14-year-old son, died of cholera for no reason, what wrong did he do in this life? So if he's dying of cholera and I am a staunch Christian believing in him and he let it happen with my son, he doesn't exist. So he concluded that God doesn't exist. So he went to the other extreme of atheism, that there is no God at all. But Harold Kushner, he struck kind of a compromise in which he said that yes, you know, we should give him position being the creator. After he created, he became a little imperfect in his qualities. So we have to understand properly, not go to this extreme saying that God is imperfect, therefore these things are happening in this world. Because many times we see anything wrong takes place, any calamity or explosions or people dying untimely, the finger goes up. Bhagwan ne aisa kyon kiya? Why did he do this to me? And amazingly, when everything is good happening, all the fingers go here. Maine kiya. Padhai maine kiya. Naukri maine, paise maine kamaya. So everything is, all the fingers go over here. But anything wrong takes place, the finger goes up. So we have to understand properly where to point that finger. So we'll be discussing on that. So before we go into today's subject matter, we have to understand that through the scriptures, we have to have a standard today to discuss. I can speak anything from my own whims, and you can understand everything maybe from your own fancies, but we have to understand from the scriptural point of view. So, the Bhagavad Gita explains five topics. The Bhagavad Gita discusses five topics. These are the broad categories which are discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. It discusses about God, Ishvara, discusses about Jiva, the living entity, Prakriti, the material nature, then Kala, the time factor, the time factor which is influencing all of us, and ultimately Karma. So we'll be focusing today on Karma, because that is the deciding factor why do bad things happen to good people. And vice versa. And in order to understand karma, we have to understand kala, we have to understand prakriti, we have to understand jiva. So when we understand jiva, which means our real identity, we living entities, you know, who are living, who are experiencing all these bad and good things in this world. So what is our position within this material world, under the purview of time, and then the karma which we perform, the activities because of which we keep getting reactions. So we'll be focusing on karma, and for that we have to understand the first, the middle three, Jiva, Prakriti and Kala. So about Ishvara, we'll be having that discussion some other time, not in this particular setting, it's out of the scope, but we'll be focusing on the other four. So beginning with we living entities, the question is, who am I? Now, you must be wondering, some of you, on this particular question. It's a very simple question. Who am I? You must be encountering more tougher questions in your life than this particular question. Exams over or still going on? Over? So liberated. Liberated for some time. Now, whenever this question comes, immediately our response is, just like if I ask some of you, that how would you answer this question? How do you answer this question? Who am I? Anybody would like to volunteer? Any smart boys here like to volunteer this, answering this question, who am I? Generally, how would we answer? We would say, my name is this and this. We would say, my name is Mr. Ramesh, Mr. Suresh, you know. We have some Ramesh Suresh here. So we may introduce ourselves with a certain name. But then the question is that if we are introducing ourselves with a name, is that name permanent or it's changeable? I remember I had a friend of mine, and he was a basketball player. So, you know, on their jersey, they have to write their name and number, the basketball players. So, parents had given him a nice name. They had given him the name Shyam. Shyam is one of the names of Krishna. But somehow, because he was living in a kind of a mod life, and all his friends were all kind of mod people, so he didn't like, he thought that it's a primitive name. Shyam. No, should have some modern name. So he changed it legally. From Shyam, he became Sam. So if we say that my identity is my name, that's not true, because it can be changed. Somebody who is Shyam may later on, after a few years, become Sam. Somebody who is Hari. Okay, you know that. So, we see that as far as our identity with our name is temporary. Let's take some other identity which we may introduce ourselves with. We may call ourselves, say, a student. But are you going to remain a student for the rest of your life in that college? Or anyone having plans, 20-year plan for in the college? So, you know, you want to graduate yourself, become an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer or whatever. So, if our occupation is that, say, we are engineer or a doctor, even that occupation can be changed. I know so many people who has been graduated as engineers, and they have opened a restaurant and are earning 10 times more than they would have earned as an engineer. So, you know, initially what their introduction as an engineer would be now has changed. Now he is a hotelier, you know, restaurant owner, or somebody who can't do anything maybe might open a panpatti shop. Or agar kuch nahi mila to fauj mein bharti ho jao. So, as far as our occupation is concerned, how practically nowadays, I saw in West over there. You know, over there they say it's the WWW culture. In the West, everything keeps changing, especially three W's. Work. At the drop of the hat, the work keeps changing. You know, if somebody is working for 3-4 years in the same company, come on, you should be more enterprising. How come you are, you know, working in one company for past 3 years? It's too much. So, work is the first W. Weather. The weather keeps changing over there. I saw in London over there, in just 1 week's time, all the six seasons. The weather is so spontaneous in its nature that in 1 week's time, you see rains, you can see snow, you can see, you know, sun coming up, everything, you know. All the seasons in just 1 week. So the second W is weather. And guess what is the third W? Ah. Quite updated you are. So, work, weather and wife. So these are the three things, you know, keep changing. The change culture from tissue paper to men, women, everything keeps changing over there. And slowly, now I can't use that word slowly, very fast, coming to India also, this particular culture. So, when we are talking of our occupation as our introduction, that's also temporary. What are the introduction which we would give to someone as of who am I? You know, we would say that I am a Gujarati, I am a Maharashtrian, I am this, because now, you know, what, Nashikite or Nashikian, what is it called? Okay, Nashik. So we might call ourselves that, you know, I am from Nashik, from Maharashtra, from India, Mera Bharat Mahan, but then I am preparing for GRE also. And, you know, my ultimate goal is to land of the land of opportunity, the United States of Nashik, America. Once I reach over there, that's it. So that Mera Bharat Mahan turns into Mera America Mahan. People become citizens over there, and, you know, rest of the life, that's the goal. So that is also temporary. If we call ourselves an Indian, that as a introduction of ours, that is also temporary. Even to the extent that, thanks to science or no thanks to science, you can't even claim yourselves as male or female nowadays. It happened in one of our programs in the West. You know, there was one boy who was attending the program in America. One of the devotees reported this to me. And after a few years, you know, this boy was not to be seen. And then she came. So now, you know, whatever, you know, it was very difficult for the devotees of the temple to address this person now. You know, whether to address this person as he, she, or it. So if we call ourselves that my introduction is maybe my gender, my name, my occupation, whatever, it's all temporary. Why it's temporary? Because it's related just to the body. Because it is related to the body, and the body is temporary. So my body was born in Nashik. My body was born as a male. My body has been named as this particular name. So therefore, anything connected to this physical body has that temporal nature in it. But what is our real identity? Our real identity is that we are eternal soul. And how can we recognize that? How can we recognize that that is our real identity? Just like we were talking of the introduction based on our body. Now, when we were born, we were only, say, you know, 1.5 foot or 2 foot, you know, of our height. Now, if somebody shows that picture of yours, what would you say? Are you the same person? Or are you different? If you see your own picture when you were 2 years old, what would you say? Are you the same person? Huh? No? You're not the same person? Confused, huh? You would say, yes, this is my photo. Huh? You would say that this is my photo. But now, if you compare it with your body has changed. There is a sea change in your body, a drastic change in your body, that from you was only 2 foot long, now you are maybe 5 foot or 6 foot. So your body has changed, but who has not changed? That soul within you, S-O-U-L, that soul within you has not changed. That has remained unchanged. So when we are speaking of our real identity, we have to understand that our real identity is not based on the physical body. Our real identity is based on the eternal spirit soul, which is activating this material body. Now, many times people, they have encountered this term called soul. How many of you have heard once in your life, ye atma bhi hai hamare andar? Huh? All of you have heard? Huh? Many times, you know, when I ask this question, people, you know, they have, we know of one atma, pret atma. Because we keep watching, you know, horror movies. So we know that atma we know. But what is this atma you are talking of? So we have actually this atma, jivatma, which we are talking of, within us, which is our real identity. But then again, you know, many times this question comes up. Have you seen it? Have you seen it? Can you show me? All these kind of questions. Now, let's try to understand the difference between body and soul using just a little bit of our common sense if we have. I know it's not very common, but still, let's try to use our common sense. Now, how to differentiate between the body and soul? First of all, if I ask you, what is the difference between a living body and a dead body? You have a living person and you have a dead person. What is the difference? Huh? One is not moving. One is not talking. The other person, you know, just like all of you sitting over here. Huh? All of you are living? Huh? Okay, all of you are living. You are able to understand. All of you are able to understand what I am speaking? So, you are able to understand. You are looking at me. You are looking at the screen. You are hearing, trying to assimilate. Now, imagine next to you, a dead person is sitting. Somehow sitting. So, imagine the dead person pats on your shoulder and tells you, "Acha lecture." Imagine the dead person, you know, "Bahut pankha laga idhar." Speaking like that, how would you feel? Just like there was one taxi driver and he was taking a passenger, and the passenger actually wanted to guide the taxi driver to reach the destination. So the passenger sitting behind, you know, just patted on the back of the taxi driver, and the taxi driver became so nervous, he banged into a tree. And the passenger, he became very afraid, somehow survived. And the passenger asked the taxi driver, "What happened? I just patted on your shoulder. Why did you bang into a tree?" So the taxi driver said, "Just today I have started driving taxi. For all these years, I was a driver of a funeral van. So I was always carrying dead bodies behind. So today as I was driving, you know, you patted. And I thought, how come the dead body is patting from behind?" So, we have a certain conception of what dead body should be doing or not doing anything. What living bodies or living persons should be doing. So, similarly, we can now deduce that that difference is the difference of the presence of soul within. The activation is of the soul for that body that we are all now, you know, understanding the subject matter. You can see, you can hear, you can move, you can do so many things while you are living. And a dead person might have all the things intact of the body, but because of the non-presence or absence of the soul, the dead body is lifeless. Now, this concept, yes, many times you see living in the so-called scientific world, we have these questions coming up. Okay, you speak so much about this soul, then can you show me? Yes, you are trying to make us understand through some examples and stories and all that, but can you really show me tangibly where that soul is? Because seeing is believing. Many times we see something, yes, I believe in this. How many of you have come across this phrase, seeing is believing? None of you? So you believe everything even if you don't see something? Okay? How many times we have this question, you know, specifically, you know, the scientific mind keeps asking this question, that science is showing us everything. When we want to see something, when we want to experience something, just like there was one atheistic professor, a scientific professor, and this person, whenever he would take his classes, his science classes, he would always conclude with how God doesn't exist. And he would give scientific analysis to that. And the students were fed up, you know, every time he would take up the science class and he would conclude with how, you know, God doesn't exist. So one day, this scientist, you know, this scientific professor came and he started off with his science lecture. And towards the end of the lecture, then he began his discussion on the existence of God. So he asked one student to get up. You get up. And then asked the student that, do you believe in God? So that student now knew that if I say yes, this professor is going to somehow refute and make me believe that God doesn't exist. So when the professor asked the student that, do you believe in God? He said, my parents believe. He said, okay, your parents believe in God. So what is, according to your parents, the conception of God? So he said, God means he is all merciful. God is the supreme creator. That's what my parents always tell me. That's what God is. So immediately the professor caught him. He said, okay, now the student is saying that God is all merciful and God is the supreme creator. So let us take these two arguments. So he said, now if God is merciful and if he is the supreme creator, then my next question is there evil in this world? Evil, you know, evil, wrong things. Now, obviously, the student said, yes, there is evil in this world. So immediately the professor, he just jumped on the student on this particular argument and said, if there is evil in this world, then if your God is all merciful and if he is the supreme creator, then he is the creator of evil also. If he is creator of everything, he is the creator of evil also. Evil exists in this world. Otherwise, how does evil exist in this world? And if he is not the supreme creator, that means he is not God. And if he is the supreme creator and he has created evil also, which means he is not merciful. If he is merciful, how could he create evil? And if he has not created evil, he is not the supreme creator. If not the supreme creator, he is not God. So then, we come to the conclusion that God doesn't exist because the definition of God is contradicting each other. Now, everyone, you know, they clapped. What a wonderful refutation. Then he asked another student to get up. And he asked this student, so do you believe in God? Now, after this refutation, what would this second student say? So he said, well, sometimes I believe. Sometimes you believe. So what is that sometimes, you know, your belief in God? I just believe. So the professor asked, okay, you say that sometimes you believe in God. So my question to you, that I have taught you science, and according to science, we believe in those things and phenomena which you can perceive with your senses. So have you seen your God with your eyes? He said, no. Have you touched your God with your skin? No. Have you heard your God with your ears? Have you smelt your God? Have you had any sensual perception of your God with any of your given senses? And he said, no. Then, according to the testable protocol of the fundamentals of science and logic, we come to the conclusion that because he can't perceive his God with any of his given senses, so God doesn't exist. And everyone started clapping. Wow, what a wonderful refutation. Now, after this, one student got on his own and he said, can I address the class professor? And the professor was very much excited that for the first time, some student on his own has got the guts to speak up to me. So he asked, okay, what do you have to say? So this student asked the professor, okay, I would like to take your two arguments which you took to refute the two students and establish atheism, that God doesn't exist. So your first argument was that God is all merciful, God is the supreme creator, and we see evil simultaneously existing. So how can these things coexist? It's contradictory. So my question to you, that is there anything called darkness in this world? According to science, how will you explain darkness? So he said, well, definitely there is darkness, otherwise what is night? So immediately the student told to the professor, you are wrong, my dear scientific professor, because there is nothing called darkness. Can you give me a jar of darkest? Darkness is nothing but absence of light. Just like over here, there is presence of light, you don't see darkness. And outside there is absence of light, so you see darkness. So he said that darkness in and itself doesn't exist. Darkness is only absence of light. You can't measure darkness, but you can measure heat and light. According to the definition of science, darkness doesn't exist. Similarly, evil doesn't exist. What is evil? Absence of divinity. So you can't say that God is the creator of evil. God is the creator of divinity. When divine things go down, what do you find? Evil things coming up. Just like when light goes down, you see darkness coming up. Everyone started clapping. What a wonderful refutation. And the professor started scratching his head that for the first time somebody has refuted his argument. Then the professor said, okay, what about my second one? Okay, I can agree to this. You know, you logically, scientifically try to explain that, yes, evil thing is nothing but absence of divinity. But what about the perception of your God with your given senses? Now, the student was very sharp. What he did, he turned to the classroom and he asked all the students, how many of you, my dear students sitting over here, have seen the brain of our professor, have touched the brain of our professor, have smelt the brain of our professor, have had any sensual perception of the brain of our professor? And everyone unanimously said, none of us. So according to the testable protocol of the fundamentals of science and logic, we come to the conclusion that our professor should not be having any brains inside. Because none of us, we have had any sensual perception of the brain of our professor. And do you know Do you know who that student was? Albert Einstein. That student who refuted that particular professor was none other than Albert Einstein, who was a staunch follower of Bhagavad Gita also. So, you know, many times our conceptions about our beliefs are only when we see something, when we, you know, experience through our given gross senses, then only we put our faith. So, as far as the soul is concerned, we can understand, just like we understand so many things through its symptoms. Just like our mind within our body. How can you understand that you have a mind within? All of you, for sure, you know that you have a mind within? How do you understand that you have a mind within? I'm not talking of the gray matter in the brain, you know, you can take it out and show. This is my brain and the gray matter inside. I'm not talking of that. We are talking of the mind, you know, the intelligence. Just like the intelligence is tested, the IQ is tested. We are thinking right now. Right now, you all must be thinking something or so many things. When this person is going to end? So many thought process might be happening in your mind. Why? You can say that there is a mind within you because you are thinking. So the symptom of the mind is your thought process which is going on. Thinking, feeling and willing. These are, you know, the symptoms of the mind. So just like we have symptoms of so many things, we have understanding of so many objects which we have not seen or even had any gross perception of it with our senses. Just like, how many of you met Mahatma Gandhi? Anyone over here met Mahatma Gandhi? Looks like this maybe. But all of you know, anyone has any doubt that Mahatma Gandhi existed or not? Anyone has any doubts that Mahatma Gandhi, maybe I don't believe whether he existed. All of you believe Mahatma Gandhi existed? But none of you have seen. So what makes you believe that Mahatma Gandhi existed? Because you have understood it through some authentic source who had seen Mahatma Gandhi, who was in touch with Mahatma Gandhi, and in that particular succession, now you come to know that yes, Mahatma Gandhi did exist. So, I'm just taking a few examples of how we put our faith in so many things and phenomena of this world which we can't perceive. But we understand through the symptoms. So similarly, the soul within our body, this question of who am I? My real identity is I am eternal spirit soul. We can understand through the symptoms that we are living. We are, you know, doing so many things as a living person does because of the presence of the soul within. Go ahead. Now, as far as the second topic of the nature of this material world, don't laugh at this. Because I'll explain to you that this is all is happening with us. You know, the material world which you are seeing over here. Can I just get your silence for a while? I thought that Nasik students are well-cultured students. People told me. So, over here, what you are seeing is this material world, the Prakriti. If you remember the previous slide, previous to that, the five topics which we spoke of, the living entity, the next was the Prakriti, this material world in which we live. So it is explained that this material world is full of miseries. Dukhalayam ashashvatam. It is Dukhalay and it is ashashvat. Now, dukhalay, when we understand this particular word, dukhalay, just like, you know, you have bhojanalaya, you have pustakalaya. So if you go into a bhojanalaya, you will get only bhojan. If you go into pustakalaya and ask for some bhojan, you know, you will only get books over there. So any alaya has that particular thing which precedes it. So similarly, when Krishna is calling this material world as what? Dukhalaya. Alaya of dukha. And these are the different categories of miseries. The first is, over here you see, that we become miserable because of our own body and mind. Just like this particular body which we have, it undergoes birth, old age, disease and death. Ultimately, finishes off in the culmination of death. But before that, this body gives us so much misery. Now, many times we are hoping that this body should give us all pleasure. But many times what we find is that this body gives us so much misery. Actually, the potential of this body to give us misery is more than the potential to give us pleasure. Just like this body which we have, how much pleasure this body gives us. You know, we have our eyes, nose, tongue, and ears, these five senses. Maybe only these senses, they give us some pleasure. But as far as the other wholesome body of ours, any of the given senses, when it starts deteriorating, like take for example, our toe. Now, every day, how many times do you become ecstatic thinking of your toe? That your toe is giving you so much pleasure. How many times we derive immense pleasure through our toe? Sometimes we don't even think for weeks that we have a toe. So as far as the pleasure potential is concerned for the toe, how much pleasure the toe can give us? Have you read some poetry or some songs, any cinema songs, beloved glorifying, your toe drives me crazy. Your toe is so beautiful. They glorify the, the eyes, the hair, and the face and all that. But have you read poetries glorifying someone's toe? Of course, Krishna's toe is glorified. But what is the pleasure potential of this toe of ours? As against that, what is the potential of this toe to give us pain? If the toe bumps into a rock and the nail comes out, then how much pain that toe will give as against pleasure? Then if you are sitting, standing, sleeping, your toe is paining, the whole consciousness shrinks down to the toe. That is the potential of this body, even though you might be eating the fanciest of all foods. But if that toe has a wound, then you will be thinking of the pain. So as far as our physical body is concerned, the physical body has got more immense potential to give us pain than to give us pleasure. So that is as far as the body is concerned. Now, the mind. What to speak of the miseries which are caused because of the mind. It is said that the deadliest disease, the 21st century, will not be the physical diseases, but it will be of the mind, the mental problems. And therefore, the survey made in US over there, the psychiatrist, every American, third American, has to visit a psychiatrist. Why? For a mental problem. Now you might ask, what about the psychiatrist? He visits other psychiatrists. After encountering so many crazy people, he has to visit other psychiatrists. Like there was one psychiatrist, and he had a typical formula for some of the patients who would be, having these depression cases. So there was one person who visited this psychiatrist. He was a depression case. So the psychiatrist, his formula was that just next to my clinic, there is a comedy show going on. There is a nice comedian. This comedy show is going on, and I give you a ticket for that. You go, and all your depression will go away. So he explained about the comedy show, about the person, how he does the comedy and everything. And he said that just go, you know, no pills required, no formulas, no therapies. Just attend that comedy show and all your depression will go away. And that person said, by the way, doctor, I am that comedian. It actually happened. That patient was actually that comedian who was doing all the comedy for others, but he himself was a depression case. And sometimes such crazy phenomena take place because of mental disbalance or imbalance. So this is another misery which is caused because of the mind within us. So misery is caused by the body, misery is caused by the mind, then natural disturbances. We have, you know, too much rain. Sometimes people are troubled, like, you know, this year Nasik had so much rain, Mumbai had so much rain, last year there were floods, people died because of which. So you have people who suffer because of too much rain, and then at some places people suffer because of no rain at all. Too much heat, too much cold, too much rain, too less rain. So all these things, they come in the category of miseries caused because of natural disturbances. And what to speak of miseries caused by other living entity. And who are those other living entities? It could be anything from human being till a mosquito. In India, you know, this wave of all these fevers, you know, what is that? Dengue and chikungunya, malaria. Now we might call ourselves to be, you know, astute scientific people, polished, you know, graduates, but a silly mosquito can kill this huge body. A small little mosquito, and that too, you know, what is its weight, what is its power as compared to, you know, somebody who might have so much power on the physical strength. A silly mosquito can kill a huge human being. A 6-foot human being can be killed. Like, see, always this particular misery caused by other living entities is very significant, specifically in the human society. Just like when we come out of our houses, we lock our homes. Sometimes big padlocks, you know, 7-lever, 9-lever, 100-lever, or, you know, grill door, security alarms, you know, watchman outside, watchdog inside, so many things. Why? Whom we are fearful of? Are we fearful of ants might crawl in? Are we fearful of some birds might fly in? We are fearful of the next human being. The next door human being should not enter the house. So we are most fearful of our fellow human beings. Sometimes when you ask someone, how is everything going on in your life? Everything is fine, you know, except, you know, my mother-in-law. So, you know, that except or that but always comes. Everything is fine, but my daughter-in-law. Everything is fine, you know, but this, but that. Like, there was one person in Bombay, remember. This person, he moved to a place, Mira Road. You know, one suburb in Bombay, you must have heard. So when he was asked by one of our devotees about how is things happening in his life, so he was explaining how everything is so wonderful now. You know, in Mira Road, he was telling that how he doesn't have to travel in those jam-packed local trains of Mumbai. You know, the workplace is over there. The school is just across the road. The market is just behind the house. And everything, the water supply is there 24 hours. So he was going on. Everything is going on so fine. But that but came. After explaining how everything was going on so nice, then he said, but there is one problem. Mira Road full of mosquitoes. So, we may have everything going on wonderfully in our life, always there is that but somewhere coming because of some other living entities. So, one of the nature of this material world is that we suffer either because of our own body or mind, either because of other living entities, or because of the natural disturbances, and many times all three put together. So this is one of the characteristics of this material world. Then what happens is that when you see sufferings within this material world, when you see sufferings within this material world, immediately as we discuss, that the blame goes on God. Why did God do this to me? Or why did God put that tsunami? Or so many, you know, innocent people in the WTC crash were killed for someone else's, you know, crazy reasons. So why these things God is allowing to happen in our life? So the blame always goes on God. Just like there was a very famous tennis player, Arthur Ashe. He was a Wimbledon champion. It's a very interesting incident which took place in his life. Arthur Ashe, this particular Wimbledon champion, he died of AIDS. Now, when he won one of the Wimbledon trophies, he was having that disease. So one of his fans wrote him a letter. And in that letter, wrote to Arthur Ashe, that why did God give you this disease of all people? God could have given this disease to anyone who was like a rank and file person, not very productive in society. But you are like a person who has this talent of playing this game. Why did God give you this disease of all people? So Arthur Ashe wrote back to this fan of his, a very interesting note he wrote. He said, every year, all over the world, 50 crore people, they start learning tennis, this game of tennis. Every year, 50 crore of people. And out of those 50 crore of people, only 5 lakh get to learn a little bit of tennis. Out of the 50 crore, only 5 lakh all over the world. Out of those 5 lakh, only 50,000 they actually learn professional tennis. And out of those 50,000 all over the world in a year, only 5,000 they actually play Grand Slam tournaments, like, you know, the Australian Open, the Wimbledon and all the others. And out of those 5,000, only 50 qualify for Wimbledon. And out of those 50, only 4 reach semifinals. And out of those 4, only 2 reach the finals. And out of those 2, only 1 wins. And this year, I was the winner. And I didn't ask God, why did I get this trophy this year? So why should I ask God that why did you select me for this disease of AIDS, when I don't ask that question to God, that out of those 50 crore, for that year who started to learn tennis, only one I was selected for the trophy of Wimbledon. Why was I selected? So therefore, do I have that courage to ask God when this disease comes to me? Like this incident took place in Scotland. There was a family, Mr. Smart, no, that was their name, Mr. and Mrs. Smart, Smart family. So this family, they had all their plans to move to US and settle in US. So they worked practically throughout their life, you know, saved all their earnings so that they can move, the entire family can move and settle down in US. So everything was done. They had collected enough funds to go to US and settle in US for the rest of their lives. It so happened just a week before one of their children was bit by a dog. And then, you know, the son was quarantined, as they say, you know. He got rabies and the entire family was not allowed to move out of the country because of the disease the son had, the rabies. So immediately, you know, this particular Smart family, Mr. and Mrs. Smart, they started cursing God that why, you know, we were, you know, believing in you, we were religious, we were religiously, honestly earning, you know, our money, and we wanted to settle down in US. And just a week before our voyage, why you arranged that a dog would bite our son and now because of that, we are not able to go to US. So started blaming God. And just a week after, they started thanking God. Actually, we did a big mistake. That we started cursing you, started blaspheming you, but actually we want to really thank you for whatever you did. And why? They thanked God just a week after when they were blaspheming him because they were supposed to board the Titanic. They had their tickets on the Titanic. They were supposed to board the Titanic. And when they understood that because of our son who was bitten by that dog, because we couldn't board Titanic, and Titanic crashed and everyone on board died, so God saved us. So now, they were thanking the same God with the same mouth just a week ago, which they were saying that, why did you do this to me? So what happens is, we start playing the blame game. When we don't understand that how certain things are happening in our life because of what? Go ahead. So, another nature of this material world, it's compared to a prison house. This material world is compared to a prison house. Now, just like a city, when the plan makers of a city, they plan out so many things in a city. They plan out the city should have, you know, schools, colleges, parks, residential complexes. Along with that, this is also a very important thing which they plan out. That there has to be a prison house. So the entire creation of God, this material world is compared to a prison house. And then who are we compared to? We are compared to the prisoners within the prison house. We may not see the shackles like as you see over here. But we are shackled with so many things. We'll be discussing about that. So why this material world is compared to a prison house in the creation of the Supreme Lord? Just like in a prison house, who are sent? In a prison house, those who disobey the laws of the government are sent in the prison house. So similarly, when we disobey the laws of God, and we disobeyed the laws of God when we were in the spiritual world with Him, so we were sent in this material world, just like those who disobey the laws of the government are sent in a prison house. Similarly, we were sent over here. And a prison house is not meant to just punish the prisoners. The prison house is meant to reform the prisoners and to make them good citizens. Similarly, this material world is a place wherein we are supposed to reform ourselves. It's not a place wherein we simply just suffer over here. Like in a prison house, there is enough facilities for the prisoners to survive. Plus there is sufficient discomfort also. If everything is very nice and up to date in a prison house, everybody would like to settle down in a prison house. Nobody would like to come out of the prison house. So there is enough given for our survival or someone's survival in the prison house, and there is sufficient discomfort also along with that. So in this material world, that is the arrangement made by the material nature so that we come to our senses, understand what is our real duty, what is our real goal, that we have to understand that this place is not a place for me to settle down, just like nobody settles down in a prison house. So this is another characteristic of this material world. Then this is very interesting that this material world comprises of the three modes. We'll be discussing about the three modes. The three modes of material nature. Now, all of us sitting in this room and also everyone within this material world, we are all combination of these three modes. And what are these three modes? We have goodness, passion, and ignorance. So these are the three modes. Just like over here you see, you know, these two people tied to these different ropes. And just like, you know, a puppet is activated by the puppeteer. So similarly, these three modes are actually making all of us work in this material world, depending on which particular mode whether it's the mode of goodness, whether it's the mode of passion, or whether it's the mode of ignorance prominent. Depending on which mode is prominent, we start acting and we start performing our actions accordingly. Now we'll go into the details of these three modes because it's very important. Our karma, which we'll be taking up that particular topic, our karma is dependent on the modes which we are situated in. Go ahead. So you have these three modes, goodness, passion and ignorance, sattva-gun, rajogun and tamogun. And the characteristics are, over here you see, in the mode of goodness, when a person is in the mode of goodness, the characteristic is knowledge. Just like all of you sitting over here, since you are seeking this knowledge, so we can say that all of you, you have the mode of goodness prominent in you, that you are knowledge seeking, therefore you have come over here. So, a person in the mode of goodness is knowledge seeking. Another characteristic is, a person in the mode of goodness is free from sinful activities. A person in sattva-gun doesn't perform sinful activities, always keeps performing good pious activities. But there is a hitch, a problem in sattva-gun, the mode of goodness, that person becomes conditioned by the sense of happiness. That yes, you know, I am upright, I am alright, and whatever I am doing, I don't have to do anything else than that. So just good activities will not take us out of this material world. There has to be something spiritual which will take us out of this material world. So when we are talking of good and bad activities, they are still on the material platform. Then we come to a person in the mode of passion. What are the characteristics of a person in the mode of passion? Just the word passion itself denotes the meaning. A person having unlimited desires. A person in the mode of passion is full of desires. And how many desires? If we try to note down how many desires we have, there is no end to it. There is already a stock of desires which we want to get fulfilled. And then there are newer desires coming up. You know, so many more new desires coming up. Say, 10 years ago, nobody would have ever desired to have a cell phone. But now, you know, immediately as a child grows up, the child wants a cell phone. So that is a new desire coming up in the already existing desires. So how many unlimited desires? Like there was one person, and he was always seen crying. So one of his friends, he met him and asked him that, come on, why are you crying? See, you always crying. So he said, you know, some weeks ago, my grandfather died. And he left behind 50 lakhs for me. He said, sorry that your grandfather died, but 50 lakhs left for you? You should be happy. And then he said, a week after that, my uncle expired and he left 20 lakhs for me. So this friend was becoming confused. You should be rejoicing. You are, you know, having 70 lakhs with you. And then he said, a week after that, my father died and he left behind 10 lakhs for me. He said, come on. Then why are you crying? He said, nobody died last week. So, as far as, you know, our desires are concerned, there might be no end to it. So how many desires we want to get satisfied? So person in the mode of passion, rajogun, and you can see, you know, city like Mumbai, how people in the mode of passion are running around trying to satisfy their desires. Then this is another characteristic of a person in the mode of passion, fruitive activity. What does that mean, fruitive activity? Always wanting, you know, some result. Or in Hindi, might say, kya milega? Yahan ke lecture mein aake kya milega? So somebody who is in the mode of passion will always be of this calculative mentality of fayda nuksan, you know, profit loss mentality. That what will I gain? If I go there, if I do this, if I speak like this, whatever I do, what will be the profit I'll be getting? And a passionate person is like that. And then of course, this is one of the most prominent characteristic of a person in the mode of passion, attraction between man and woman. Of course, we may have to change this nowadays. It could be anything. So things are changing. Kali Yuga is progressing, and therefore this passion is taking such horrific and barbaric faces. So a person in the mode of passion is like that. Then we have a person in the mode of tamoguna, ignorance. These are the characteristics of a person in the mode of ignorance, madness, laziness, sleep and intoxication. Sometimes people simply, they want to intoxicate themselves. And what is this particular word, intoxication, it means? You know what the word toxin means? Toxin means poison. And intoxication means taking that poison inside. That's the meaning of intoxication. So a person who is too much into intoxication is in the mode of ignorance. And sometimes people, they simply love to sleep. That's my favorite sport, is to sleep. I had a friend of mine, and you won't believe this, but this is true. This person, how much he could sleep? Saturdays, he would come, having half days. So he would come, say 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and he would have his lunch, and after the lunch, he would prepare his bed. And then he would go to sleep. And guess when he would get up? He would get up Sunday evening. That was his, you know, weekend sport. He would get up Sunday evening to take his dinner, again go to sleep, get up Monday morning to go to office. So a person in the mode of ignorance is very much attracted to the mode of sleep. Anything happening over there? Anything wrong? What is it? So we were discussing misery is caused by other living entities. You can see here. So we see that these three modes. Can I have some silence of yours, please, in case we are all trying to understand the subject matter? So that I can speak good about you in Bombay. That yes, the students of Nasik are very well behaved. Definitely? Should I speak like that? So you should cooperate with me. So, over here, now we see that how do we recognize that a person is situated in which mode? Hare Krishna. How do we recognize a person situated in which mode? Just like a person, what kind of choices the person makes? Now we discussed of the three modes. So we have the three basic colors. You have red, you have blue, and you have yellow. So these are the three basic colors, and all the other colors, they are nothing but permutation and combination of these three basic colors. So each personality within this material world comprises of these three basic gunas, sattva gun, rajo gun, and tamo gun. And depending on a particular guna, a person makes certain choices. Like for example, a person in the mode of goodness, what will be the choices of, say, the food choices? A person in the mode of goodness will choose, you know, vegetarian food, food which is nutritious, fruits, cereals, nuts, and milk, and these kind of things. A person in the mode of goodness will choose to eat. A person in the mode of passion, what kind of food the person in the mode of passion will choose? Very hot, spicy, that kind of food. You know, unless fumes are coming out from the 9 holes of the body, you know, maja nahi aaya. That kind of food is liked by a person who is in a mode of passion. Burns when it goes in, burns when it comes out. So a person in the mode of passion is that kind of a person. Then a person in the mode of ignorance likes food which is putrid, stale, decomposed, canned, tinned, in refrigeration for 300 years. These kind of foods, a person in the mode of ignorance loves to eat. Then there is music in the three modes. You can understand a person, what mode that person is situated in. A person in the mode of goodness will like, you know, classical kind of music, which is more soothing, which is more rejuvenating to the consciousness. Just like I remember in my times, the radios, the morning time would have the classical and some bhajans and these kind of music. And during the daytime, you know, the passionate music would begin. Of course, now I guess it's all the same from morning till night. And the name of the radio channels are also like that. Mirchi. You know, we saw on the billboards in Bombay, Mirchi. So, you know, the name of these channels, the music channels are also like that. Passionate. So, person in the mode of passion, what kind of music the person likes? You know, rock. And, you know, the name itself is like that. Pop, rock, jazz. You know, unless the window panes break, you know, usme maja nahi aata, us kind of music. The window panes should break. Blaring music. Like, I always remember somebody was telling me about this rap music. Now, somebody played this rap music and I didn't understand a single word of what language this person is, what it's singing or speaking. You know, it's like randomly so fast that person just keeps speaking something which I don't know whether that person understands himself. And it's considered to be a kind of music. In fact, I thought that when this person was singing that rap music, I thought maybe this person is constipated for 7 days and is having a serious problem with his bowels. And then the sound which comes out having those serious problems has turned out into this music called rap music. In fact, in some villages of India, the farmers were playing this rap music. And some of the rap musicians, they visited this village and they saw the farmers playing the rap music. So they were very much impressed that our music has become so famous that the farmers are playing it in their farms. So they inquired from the farmers that what actually inspired you to play this rap music in your fields? So they said, we don't know anything about what you call this as rap music. We know one thing, when we play in our farm, in our crops, no animals come. Hearing this, you know, whatever your rap music, no animals come to attack us. So that is what we have understood about this, your rap music. So a person in the mode of passion likes that kind of music. Then there are music albums which put you in tamoguna, the mode of ignorance. So there are music albums which put you in tamoguna, the mode of ignorance. So you see the choices which people make. Just like some of you are so restless right now that you are not trying to focus over here. And this is one of the signs of these modes infiltrating within us, that a person in a mode of passion cannot sit in one place and listen to something. You know why? What happens is, when the TV is on, there are so many flashy things coming and going. So the passionate person sits and watches with glued eyes. Why? Because everything is moving. But when that stops, he starts moving. So this is the sign of a typical passionate person, that the passionate person cannot sit and attentively listen to a topic like this because of the passion within. Something passionate should be happening. You know, something, you know, which should kick my senses. over here, you know, this baldy man standing and speaking for past 1 hour, speaking about modes and, you know, why do bad things happen and all these things. Unless that, you know, dhakchik goes on, I don't get that kick in my life. So what happens is, yes, for some time, you know, that person might get the kick, but material energy keeps kicking that person throughout the life without even knowing, and that person keeps inviting all the kicks. So these are the characteristics of a person who are situated in either of these modes or all of these modes put together. So now, we come to the next point of Kala, the time factor. That it is Krishna's energy, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Kalosmi Lokakshaya Krit Pravruddho. That this entire material world is permeated by the time factor. And it's the ultimate amongst all killers. Just like you may have some big dictators from our history books. Say, Hitler killed so many people, thousands and millions of people. You know, Stalin killed so many millions of people. But then, the question should be asked, who killed them? If they were big killers, killed so many people, the first question one would ask, who killed them? And that is the time factor. They are simply in the history books now. So time factor is such a powerful element that within this material world, as it is said, time and tide wait for none. So we may have chalked out. Sometimes, you know, people say, let's go for a movie and kill some time. Have you heard that phrase? Let's go for a movie, let's go for a party and kill some time. It, what's actually happening is that time is killing everyone within this material world. And it's actually, we don't pass time, we pass away, time remains here. Many times people say this also, let's pass our time, you know, by gossiping or by doing something which is not very fruitful or productive. But what's happening is that time is influencing everyone within this material world, and we keep passing away from one species to another species, and it is time which stays here and influencing all of us. So the cycle of the universe from, you know, Satyug to Treta to Dwapar to Kaliyuga, which is we are living in, that takes place because of the time factor. Then we have the transformations which takes place. Just like we have this physical body, and there are the six transformations. We take birth, then we grow, there is stability, there is byproducts, then there is dwindling of the body, it's old age, and ultimately there is, what is it? There is death. So these are the six transformations of the body which takes place. Now, coming to our karma point, the definition of karma, what you see over here, activities performed by living entity conditioned by the three modes which we discussed, under the control and purview of time. And therefore, this might be a familiar a kind of a law which you might have come across. For every action, there is equal and opposite or corresponding reaction. So this is precisely, this is precisely the definition of karma. That for every action, whatever we do, we are responsible for it. We are responsible for whatever we think, we speak, and ultimately we do, because whatever we are thinking will come into our words, whatever we are speaking will come into our actions, and whatever we do will actually make our destiny. So therefore, what we have to understand before we go into the details of karma is this is how karma works. So we may be performing a certain activity and we may think that there will be no reaction to it. But we have to mind it for sure that every particular action we perform, whether good or bad, it has got a corresponding reaction depending on whether it's good or bad. So let's go into some preliminary knowledge of this karma. First of all, we have to understand what is the definition of sin, because of which bad things happen. So deliberate disobedience of the laws of God, that's called sin. In this human form of life, we are supposed to stay away from sinful activities. But we see that specifically in the human form of life, we humans, we indulge in so many sinful activities. So because we indulge in so many sinful activities, therefore the law of karma is applicable to us. And what is the knowledge of that? You have the good and the bad karma. So people who are performing good karma, that is one category. And then there are people who are performing bad karma, that is another category. There is nothing in between. Don't think that I will be somewhere in between, you know. I can enjoy, you know, both the worlds. I can enjoy both the kinds of karma, or good or bad. Either you are part of the problem or you are part of the solution, as it is said. So we have to understand that there is good karma, which is pious activities, and then there is bad karma, which is impious activities or sinful activities. Now, as far as this human form of life is concerned, we have to understand, as herein it is mentioned, that this human form of life is like a train junction. Just like a junction is a place from where you can go at different locations. So similarly, in this human form of life, either we can go up from this human form of life to the spiritual world, or we can remain in this human form of life depending on our karma, or we can glide down into the animal species depending on our karma again. So depending on what karma we perform in this human form of life, just like how you use a junction, a train junction, will depend where you will go. Similarly, this human form of life will decide whether we'll go above from this human form of life into the spiritual world, or we'll remain here, or we'll glide down. So therefore, this is what, first of all, we have to understand, the human form of life can give us, has that potential. Now secondly, the law of karma is only applicable to we humans. Now if a tiger kills a deer, the tiger is not hanged for that murder of deer, because the tiger naturally is supposed to kill a deer and eat the deer. But if a human being tries to do that, trying to imitate a tiger, then the law of karma immediately is applied to the human being. Because we human beings, we are supposed to be superior to the animals. And because we are supposed to be superior to the animals, we have a certain responsibility. We are not supposed to live like animals and think that I can enjoy all the devilish delights of the animals and still call myself as a human being. So therefore, the scriptures explain that as a human being, if we don't live like a human being, a civilized human being, then we are simply two-legged animals. The only difference is that this animal has a degree, this animal has a suit and tie, and this animal can speak maybe a polished language. But that doesn't make that person a civilized human being. A civilized human being is that person who can cut through the cycle of this karma, of all the diseases and birth, old age, death, and all the problems which we discussed, and go to the spiritual world and attain love of God or association with God. Go ahead. Now herein you see, just like if you are, somebody is tilling a land. When you are tilling a land, then whatever seeds you sow, only those crops will fructify. If you have sown wheat, you will find only wheat coming up. So similarly, as far as karma is concerned, if you have performed good karma, you will reap good reactions. If you have performed bad karma, you will reap a bad reaction for it. But one cannot say that good and bad karma can cancel each other. Separately, a person will be rewarded for good karma, and separately, a person might be punished for any kind of bad karma. So herein, we can't say that, okay, now I'm a good person. In my previous life, if I performed some bad activity, and if I'm now a good person, then this good activity should cancel all the bad activities which I might have performed in my previous life. No, they don't cancel each other. So then we'll come to the answer to that question, why do bad things happen to good people? When we discuss the point of how there is instant reaction and there is delayed reaction, depending on the intensity of the karma. So herein you can see that there is individual and there is collective karma. So a person who performs individually some good or bad activity will individually get the reaction. Then somebody who collectively performs good or bad activities will get the reactions collectively. For example, if 1,000 workers are working in an automatic animal slaughter plant, so 1,000 of them will get a collective karmic reaction for killing animals. And how that might take place? Maybe the 1,000 of those might in their next life take birth in one village, an earthquake, and the entire village washed off. Or maybe in a tsunami, the entire village washed off. So you might not know that why the entire village was washed off, because we might not know that in their previous life, they might have collectively performed a certain karma because of which they are getting the reactions in this particular life. So individual karma will give individual reaction, collective karma will give collective reaction. And here is instant and delayed karmic reactions also. That you do a certain activity and you get instant reactions. You just go down on the street, slap someone, you'll get instant reaction. That is called instant reaction for your instant karma. Then there is a delayed karmic reaction. You do a certain activity right now, but there might be a delay in the reaction. For example, if you go and eat something which is not good for your body, and maybe a few days later, your body will give the reaction to what you had eaten a couple of days before. And many of the diseases also act like that. Just like this AIDS. AIDS has got an incubation period. And how delayed it is sometimes? Sometimes for 10, 15 years. The patient might even not know that he's suffering from AIDS. And the symptoms might come up after 15, 20 years. So here is the example of somebody who gets delayed karmic reaction. Now, for example, now I am acting like a monk, a sadhu, and I am speaking to you about law of karma. But imagine if 10 years before this, if I would have done something wrong or committed a crime. So if the police is searching for me since past 10 years, and the police catches me right now, and if I tell to the police, but right now I'm a good person, I might have committed that crime 10 years ago, but right now I'm a good person, I'm not committing any those kind of activities. Will the police leave me? Will the police say, okay, now he's a good person, so okay, you can be relieved now. The police will catch me and give the punishment for the crime which I committed 10 years ago. So similarly, even though a person might be good right now, but if the person has committed a very untoward sinful activity, maybe in the previous life, so that carries forward in the next life. And that is the answer to the question is, why do bad things happen to good people? Because of maybe the delay in the reaction which is supposed to come upon them. and vice versa also, why good things happen to bad people. That because they might be bad right now, but they might have performed good activities in their previous life or earlier part of this life, and therefore they are getting the good reactions because of this. So now one might ask this question, if everything is predestined, then why should I work? Anyone would like to answer this question? If everything is predestined. Yes? The backbenchers? If everything is predestined, then why should I work? I should just sit back and depend on my destiny. What they call, naseeb mein likha hoga to hoga. Huh? Like that? Yes. Over here, yes, he is saying that if we perform a good activity, then we can have a good destiny. So our destiny depends on our free will. We have a free will within us. We can use or we can misuse. I'll give you an example. A certain man, he decides to climb a skyscraper building, which has say 25 floors. So he goes up 10 floors, he uses free will to go climb 10 floors, and then he decides that, no, I don't want to go so high, so he comes down. Then again, he chooses his free will, he climbs 20 floors, and again he climbs down. Now he goes up to, the third time he goes up on the terrace, and then he decides, let me take a shortcut. So he jumps from the terrace. Now when he's in mid-air, he starts thinking, oh, I want to come back. The only destiny for that person is that he will hit the ground. That will be the destiny. So that person, he chose certain particular choice. But then the destiny, just like when you write your exams. So before your exams, you have a choice what you write or what you study. Let's take like that. Before the exams, you can even study, Stardust. You can study Stardust for the whole year. And when the exam comes, you can write on the answer sheet also. You can write on the answer sheet all what you have studied all through the year. You can write about your own autobiography. Nobody is going to question you. But once you give your answer sheet, then the destiny is not in your hands. So before that, the destiny was in your hands, whether you will pass or fail. So similarly, in our life also, how we prepare our life, that depends or that decides what actually will be our destiny. So therefore, in one sense, we can say that yes, everything is predestined, and we can say nothing is predestined. Depending on what choices we make, depending on what activities we perform. Right? And therefore, one might ask this question, well, I am attending this seminar and I am getting to know about, what is good, what is bad karma, and what are the reactions and the intricacies of karma. So somebody who has not attended this seminar, that person should be excused. But ignorance of law is no excuse, as we have heard so many times. If a cannibal from Africa comes to Nashik, you know what a cannibal means? Cannibal is a person who eats human beings. So if a cannibal from Africa comes and it starts eating human beings, then will the police just leave the cannibal, because cannibals are supposed to eat humans, The cannibal says that in Africa, this is our regular lunch dinner. So will the judge leave the cannibal that, okay, because you are from Africa, therefore I leave you. Ignorance of law is no excuse. And therefore, we as human beings, we are supposed to know the laws of God. Just like Living in India, you are supposed to know the laws of Indian government. Living in the state of Maharashtra, you are supposed to know the laws of state government. When you are on the road driving or walking, you are supposed to know the traffic laws. If you are driving a vehicle, if the traffic policeman catches you for breaking the signal, and if you say, well, I thought, you know, red means you should go. So, you know, red is my favorite, and therefore I thought it's red alert, so I should move. And if you tell to the traffic policeman that red, I suppose it's red alert, so I keep moving, will the traffic policeman laugh at you and say, okay, you can go? So just like all these laws we are supposed to know, similarly, the laws of God we are supposed to know. And therefore, when we encounter any of these phenomena in our life or in someone's life, when bad things happen, even though that person might be good, we have to understand that something might have gone wrong. Just like any patient, if a person is having malaria, you come to know that mosquito has bitten. Now, if a person is asking the doctor, tell me which part of my body the mosquito bit me, what is the use? The very fact you are having malaria, which means mosquito has bitten you. Similarly, the very fact that there is something wrong, bad happening in our life, which means we have done something wrong in our previous life or earlier part of this life. Now, I would like to show you a very interesting poem. So kindly pay attention to this. This is something which really can make us understand why this world around us is in such a bad shape. And we are speaking of not just the world, you know, in its gross sense, but the people living within this world. So this is a very interesting poem, or a kind of an answer which was given in the most advanced nations of this world, America. And therefore it really caught me, and as it is written over here, I hope this catches you the way it caught me. Go ahead. In light of many perversions and jokes we send along to one another for a laugh, this is a little different. This joke today is not intended to be a joke. It's not intended to be funny. It's intended to get you thinking. Go ahead. A prominent American's daughter named Annie Graham was interviewed on a TV show, and Jane Clayson asked her, how could God let something like this happen regarding the WTC crash, September 11? So this was the question asked. And the reply Anne Graham gave, an extremely profound and insightful response. She said, I believe God is deeply saddened by this, just as we are. But for years we have been telling God to get out of our schools, to get out of our government, and to get out of our lives. And being the gentleman he is, I believe he has calmly backed out. How can we expect God to give us his blessings and his protection if we demand that he leave us alone? Go ahead. In light of recent terrorist acts, school shootings, etc., I think it started when we complained we didn't want prayer in our schools, and we said okay. Then someone said, you better not read the Bible in school, because Bible says thou shall not kill, thou shall not steal, and love your neighbor as yourself. And we said okay. Then someone said, teachers and principals better not discipline our children when they misbehave. The school administrator said, no faculty member in the school better touch a student when they misbehave, because we don't want any bad publicity, and we surely don't want to be sued. And we said okay. Then someone said, let's let our daughters have abortions if they want, and they won't even have to tell to their parents. And we said, okay, we legalized in India. Then some wise school board member said, since boys will be boys and they are going to do it anyway, let's give our sons all the condoms they want so they can have all the fun they desire, and we won't have to tell their parents they got them at school. And what do we say? We said okay for that also. Then some of our top elected officials said it doesn't matter what we do in private as long as we do our jobs. Agreeing with them, we said it doesn't matter to me what anyone, including the president, does in private as long as I have a job and the economy is good. Then someone said, let's print magazines with pictures of nude women and call it wholesome, down-to-earth appreciation for the beauty of the female body. And what did we say? Okay for that. And then someone else took that appreciation a step further and published pictures of nude children and then further again by making them available on the internet. And we said, okay, they are entitled for free speech. Then the entertainment industry said, let's make TV shows. Hare Krishna. This is supposed to get you thinking. In India, do you know, we Indians are now famous for not our Indian culture. What you are reading out here, we Indians are now famous all over the world for pornography, vulgarity, obscenity, and all kinds of these nonsense which is going on. So we are supposed to pull up our socks and understand that what we are supposed to do, and we are saying okay for all this. So herein, then the entertainment industry, the TV shows and movies that promote profanity, violence and illicit sex. Let's record music that encourages rape, drugs, murder, suicide and satanic themes. And we said it's just entertainment. It has no adverse effect. Nobody takes it seriously anyway. So go right ahead. And we, like shameless people, said, okay. Now, read this. Now we are asking ourselves, why our children have no conscience? Why they don't know right from wrong? And why it doesn't bother them to kill strangers, their classmates, and themselves? Go ahead. I think it has a great deal to do with this. We reap what we sow. Funny how simple it is for people to trash God and then wonder why the world is going to hell. Funny how we believe what the newspapers say but question what the Bible says. Funny how you can send jokes through email and they spread like wildfire, but when you start sending messages regarding the Lord, people think twice about sharing. Funny how lewd, crude, vulgar and obscene articles pass freely through cyberspace, but public discussion of God is suppressed in the school and at workplace. Are you laughing or are you thinking? Really? Go ahead. Funny how when you forward this message, you will not send it to many on your address list because you are not sure what they believe or what they will think of you for sending it. Funny how we can be more worried about what other people think of us than what God thinks of us. Pass it on if you think it has merit. If not, then discard it. No one will know you did it. But if you discard this thought process, don't sit back and complain about what shape, bad shape, the world is in. Do we dare to ask now, why do bad things happen to good people? After all that, that was the response to that one question, that why did God allow that September 11 crash? And then when we go into our own lives, and in the lives of all the people around us, what do we find? We find that we love, we actually rejoice on all these unmentionable things, which is now not just infiltrating the world on the other side of this planet, but infiltrating this Indian country also, in which we Indians, we are not supposed to be exporters of just software engineers or become just repository of that Western knowledge, or just know how to use machines and computers. We are supposed to know our real culture, in which we are supposed to protect ourselves, and not just protect ourselves, but to protect others by actually imbibing this culture within us. So therefore, when we see bad things happening to so many people, we have to understand, first of all, just have a look at the world around us. And we are talking of the people living within this world and what are they up to. And then, of course, we can try to ask this question and get this answer, why do bad things happen to good people? And therefore, there are three types of karma. That is, the pious activity, the good karma, which a person performs free from sins. Then there is a sinful karma, vikarma. And then there is akarma. Akarma means that particular karma which frees us from the cycle of even good and bad karma. Because even just simply moral good karma will keep us within this material world. But akarma is that particular karma which is performed directly for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, to conclude with, it is said that life is a preparation and death is like the examination. All of you, being students, you have encountered examinations in your life. And you know that when examinations approach, you have to be well prepared. If you are not well prepared, then you know what that examination can do to you. So similarly, if we compare death, which eventually is going to come upon every one of us sitting over here, do you all agree that we are going to die one day? So if we are going to die one day, and the irony about that examination is we do not know when it will come. Do you know when that examination will come? For your college examinations, at least you have a timetable. The examination date given and the timetable is given. But for this examination of death, you do not have a timetable for you. It might come the next moment. But then the question is, are we prepared? Are we prepared for this examination of death? Or are we prepared only with all the nonsense things which we just read out in that? Are the, you know, preparations which we are making for that final exam are only all those things? And definitely, what will be the reaction for that? Definitely, birth, old age, disease and death, and everything which goes on in between that. So therefore, to conclude with, we have to understand that bad things happen to bad people and good things happen to good people. It's only a question of our choice whether we want to become a good person and get the good reactions, or whether we want to become a bad person and get the bad reactions. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So, anyone has any questions for whatever we discuss? Anyone has any questions? Of whatever we discuss today, or any other question which you might have in terms of spiritual life, or what a youth of India is supposed to know or understand. So I guess all of you agree with whatever we discussed today. You have a question? Yes, definitely. The question is, can we decide our next life depending on our karma in this life? We were discussing about that. That our karma is dependent on our choices. You make a choice and you enact it. And that action, culminative of that, will decide your next body. So whatever choices which we make at every moment will decide whatever actions we will perform at every moment. And whatever actions we perform at every moment will decide our destiny, not just in next life, but in this life also. So therefore it is said, man is the maker of his destiny as well as the breaker of his destiny. So we can either make our destiny by making right choices, or we can break our destiny by making the wrong choices. So we all want to thank you again for your patient hearing. Yeah. Can I just have your attention over here? This gentleman is asking a question. And I guess all of we over here are also gentlemen. So kindly listen to this question. You all agree that you are all gentlemen? Huh? Yeah. Yeah.
So, with... Hello. Okay, so with the,
Hare Krishna. There's nothing to laugh in this. There's nothing to laugh in this. It's simply, you know, a person who is trying to ask a question, and I guess we have to have a little conscience, a little kind of culture given to us by our parents, by our teachers, in order to maintain a certain kind of decorum and sobriety, in order to appreciate someone's curiosity who's trying to ask something. So please, we just want from you that you just maintain a little bit of silence for some time. Yes. No, definitely. The question is that we discussed about the three modes and how the three modes actually they act upon us just like a puppeteer is acting on puppets. Definitely, we have the free will in between those three modes to choose and get over or come above the three modes. So that free choice is given, just like right now, we have a free choice. We are sitting over here. We have a free choice that we can sit and discuss about God, and we have a free choice to sit and discuss about anyone else. So because we are discussing about God, we are now using that free will to progress from a lower mode to a higher mode. And the same time, the same place, all the same circumstances, we can misuse the free choice also and then degrade down into a lower mode. So that's how we upgrade ourselves, by making better choices in our life. So that freedom is there with us. Yeah. See, as a human being, Hare Krishna. As a human being, we have the prerogative of that free choice to do good activities. Even if somebody who is illiterate, as a human being, has got that particular faculty inbuilt as a human being to make the good choices. And plus, of course, the association of good people, that is the most important factor in order to make the good choices. Now, a person in this particular material world might make wrong choices because of wrong association. But even in that wrong association, he still has the willpower to not make the wrong choice also and to make the right choice. So that willpower is there in every one of us. So because we have the willpower within us, the only thing is, many of us, we have just trashed it down and not used it. And many of us, we are using that same willpower for something negative or something which is not beneficial for us. But that essential quality of willpower is there within all of us, whether we use it or misuse it. So therefore, we can't say that it's the modes because of which I'm like this. We can't blame on the modes also. The modes are there, but we chose to be in that particular mode. And we can choose to come out from those modes. And of course, good association can augment that, can help us come out from those modes. And that's how it works. So again, I would like to remind all of you that our next Prerna will be November 18th. And we have a very interesting topic, the power of habits. And specifically, this particular phase of our life, the youth, we see that because of our habits, we make so many wrong choices. And of course, you know, the karmas become like that, and because of which the reactions are like that. So a very, very interesting topic. We'll be having a PowerPoint presentation and a similar seminar like this, the upcoming Prerna, the next month. So now we'll be having Kirtan. So for some time, we request all of you to stand up and participate wholeheartedly in this Kirtan program.
Hare Krishna. Now there is small announcement. Everybody, please attentive. Now here,